from Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital.
Well, we remember those words, those of us who were alive then, and my guest was alive and still alive, and I know people have been asking, where's Dr. Milt Rosenberg? He's right here. Welcome back to the Tribune Complex. Missed you in the last year since you've been gone.
It does stir certain memories.
Well, I hope so. You spent a lot of time here.
Yeah, I was in this studio during the first week that it was operative, only because we were preempted by, I guess, hockey, but we had a very good guest that we wanted to play. How many people heard it, I don't know.
All right.
But it was fun. And we came in here on occasion.
Where have you been since you left here? What have you been doing?
Well, as you know, my major broadcasting operation is a podcast series that is going, if I say so myself, rather well. It can be heard simply at miltrosenberg.com, and also it can be heard on Ricochet. Do you know them?
I know Rick, and I know O'Shea.
Yeah.
Put them together, you got something there.
I don't know what you call these kinds of things, but
they're out there. They're
thousands of people become members, and they write little essays and so on. But also this same outfit, that's Ricochet in the French spelling, R-I-C-O-C-H-E-T, ricochet.com. They also carry some 8 or 10 podcast operations. Mine is one.
Would you like to come back to WGN sometime?
What an interesting thought. Well, I hated to leave, frankly.
You know?
When you come right down to
it. Well, I mean, you're no stranger to how this business rotates and twists and turns. So it happens, and we don't know. One day you're sitting here, the next day, what happened? All of us have gone through it.
I hate to brag. You know I'm a very modest fellow.
You are.
But one fact that has numerosity about it is one that continues to recur to me, and some of my friends mention it often as well. The last full month that I broadcast, November, October, and we were, of course, very busy on the Internet with the audio archive that we operated. We had 9 million downloads in that month. And that stuns some people when they hear about it. It stuns me until one recognizes that it was the month before the election. And of the 30 broadcasts that were covered there, 3 were post-debate, post-presidential debate. But we had lots of other heavy, heavy business in that month.
All right.
Everybody here now is on the Internet, right?
Right. And now we're doing full podcasts of the show, which for me just happened recently, which is nice.
So it's available whenever you want to download.
Exactly. Exactly.
Any show at all? An old show? A new show?
I think everything is on there that has been done in the last month, certainly.
But we'll stay on there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
And your real purpose, besides, I wanted to catch up with you, is to talk about what's happening on Friday, the 50th anniversary. I don't know if anybody's heard about this, of the assassination of our then president. And I don't know if you were working in 63. I don't know your background from that point. I know you've been or were at this radio station from the 70s on.
Oh, no, I wasn't here in Chicago at all. I was in New Haven, Connecticut, at Yale. And I do remember the day, to be sure. I was a much, much younger fellow and more naive about politics, but that was a stunner. But I found something very interesting. One site that I go to regularly and look at is sort of a conservative site, just as I'm a sort of a conservative person politically. And I find there's an essay there just this day in which the guy says, enough about Kennedy. He was not really much of a president. And why do we have so much fuss about him? Forget him. It isn't worth our attention. And 60 or 70 people in the morning, which was when I looked at it, had climbed on board and were agreeing with him. And that really stuns me.
It's one of those things where they say James Dean was better off dying after 3 movies because he became this thing, this icon like Marilyn Monroe. They're better off dying young because they didn't have any chance to do bad work.
They say that about Lincoln as well.
Yes. So that sets the table for what we're going to talk about for the next 45 minutes. Milt has brought some audio in that we're going to share that he has played over the years, I'm sure, on your program, but I have not heard this, and I'm anxious to hear what he has with him. And we'll take your phone calls, too, 312-981-7200. Milt, we have a call here. Greg, you're on.
Oh, I got to put on a headset.
You remember how to do that? Here we go.
Hello, Gary, and Professor Rosenberg. What a pleasure it is to speak with the two of you. Gary, first-time caller, been listening to you since 1980, and Professor Rosenberg since the late 80s.
Thank you.
And question, first of all, before that, just a quick comment. I would agree, Professor Rosenberg, that you are a fiscal conservative. I don't know that I necessarily would say that you are a social conservative, which brings up the question. I have never heard you speak on the subject of Kennedy before, and in his abridged presidency, could you tell me, as a as a young man at that point, what was your impression of his abridged presidency?
Abridged is an interesting way to describe it. It was 1,000 days, as Arthur Schlesinger points out in the title of his biography. In those days, I was somewhat more liberal, I guess is the word, than I am now. And I voted for him. It was my first vote, I think. And I was very glad to have him there. And they were a fabulous couple. You know, it was Camelot from a distance, as one looked on. But later on, one learned a great deal else about how he comported himself. I can't imagine that with the drugs that he took and with all of the extracurricular sexual activity and whatever the hell else was going on when Jackie was down in Virginia at the horse
He was
farm.
In Virginia, too,
yeah, well,
as it turns out.
A different Virginia, yeah.
Yes.
And Maryland.
And I don't think – I'm not sure he was fully competent for some of the terrible challenges. The one that he really met, I guess, well, was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Well, the drugs you speak of are because of his injuries during the war.
That was the coverage. That was the story.
Yeah. All right, let's do with the audio you brought, some of the audio. And what's this first piece?
Well, let me tell you about this. This is one of our recent podcasts. We do about 2 or 3 a week, which you can hear regularly on MiltRosenberg.com or Ricochet.com. This is a guy, we only recorded this about a month ago or less. His name is Philip Sheenan, a New York Times veteran, a Washington Bureau. And this is a book of his that's just appeared about the Warren Court, which he says was a real, that is the Warren I don't mean court, I mean
commission.
The Warren Commission, which he says was a real mess. Nobody did serious work except the staff. And staff, old staff people still around came to him and said, this is the book you've got to write. And he did. But here we're talking, he and I, about the many kinds of theories that have popped up about the nature of the assassination. Who really killed and John F. Kennedy and why?
All right.
But you are suggesting, are you not, that the Cubans were probably involved in all of this and did set Oswald up somehow to carry through the act that he offered them, or maybe they, in fact, even had earlier recruited him to undertake the assassination?
I'm not sure I'm saying that. I am saying, though, that he goes to Mexico several weeks before the assassination, and he's in the company of Cubans and Mexican civilians who support Castro's revolution, who, dealing with this young former Marine who has rifle training at the height of the Cold War, at the time when President Kennedy is very clearly trying to kill Fidel Castro, and Castro knows it, isn't it possible that somebody encouraged Oswald to do what he did or could have offered help if Oswald was able to carry out the deed and get back to Mexico? And that is not my crazy conspiracy theory. That is a theory that was developed within the staff of the Warren Commission. It didn't go into the Warren Commission final report because the decision was made that the report should not be speculative.
Actually, there's a quote from Lyndon Johnson suggesting that that Kennedy was assassinated because he was attempting to assassinate Castro, that the Cubans got to him before he got to Castro.
Well, it's pretty troubling to discover. You know, if you want to talk about conspiracy theorists, I guess you've got to include in that list President Johnson, the man who set up the Warren Commission, because by the time of his death, Johnson was apparently absolutely convinced that Castro had done it. And then you look at Robert Kennedy. Robert Kennedy, whose role in this is very troubling, start to finish. Robert Kennedy, who repeatedly says in the public record that he's convinced the Warren Commission was right, that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone, but who apparently to his friends and family said exactly the opposite. His own son, Robert Kennedy Jr., announced earlier this year that his father had always thought the Warren Commission was, I think the quote was, a shoddy piece of craftsmanship, and that he believed his brother had been killed either by Castro or by the mafia or by some rogue element of the CIA. And again, another conspiracy theorist apparently was Senator Richard Russell, this very powerful senator from Georgia, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, who was a member of the Warren Commission itself, and who also believed that the Warren Commission got it wrong.
All right. So have you tipped your cards, Milt, on what you believe happened, or do you want to just be the ringmaster on all this?
I got a roundabout way of responding to that. You remember Mies van der Rohe, the great architect?
Sure.
He's best known for all of his great buildings, which are all over Chicago and all over the world, but also for one quotation where he says, quite simply, less is more. The trouble with Kennedy assassination scholarship and reportage is that there have been literally over 1,000 books, English language books, about the assassination, presenting theory one, theory two, theory to the nth. And evidence supporting, and then other guys write a book saying, no, all the evidence is lousy. Here's the real evidence. It's cacophony. It's pure cacophony, so that you no longer have the sense, illusory or otherwise, that you've got the capability of making any final judgment. I don't have it. I had on the program probably 20 or more authors of Kennedy assassination books. One guy I loved was a guy named John Davis, who is the cousin was the cousin of Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy Onassis, first cousin, close relation, a Navy man, among other things, very elegant guy. And he became convinced that the Mafia did it. And he had all sorts of evidence, including recordings of the conversations between Santos Trafficante and that other one down in New Orleans. I forget what his name was. But
Garrison?
No. Well, Garrison was onto it in New Orleans, but there's another Mafia figure.
Oh, the Mafia figure.
Yeah. There's a recording supposedly produced by the FBI in which they're talking about the necessity of killing Kennedy because of the persecution they're suffering at the hands of the Attorney General.
All right.
Robert Kennedy.
We're going to continue on until 6 o'clock with Milt Rosenberg. And I want to ask after the news why this matters 50 years later. And there, to me, are some connections to 9/11 on how this was handled altogether. And we'll take your phone calls at 312-981-7202. WGN.
There is Leon. He's been shot. He's been shot. Lee Oswald has been shot. There's the man with a gun. Absolute panic. Absolute panic here in the basement of Dallas Police Headquarters. Detectives have their guns drawn.
The first time, well, that was a reality show right there. The first big reality show was 50 years ago. It's been said that modern television was born on the day JFK died. And that moment there, where you saw somebody murdered on television.
Incredible. Incredible.
It's 50 years ago. Milt Rosenberg, former WGN host, is here with me. We're talking about the 50th anniversary. And we're going to, as you would say, dash onto the phones in just a minute. I know you have some more audio we're going to share before 6 o'clock. I made the statement before the news that why does this matter 50 years later? Well, you mentioned all the books, thousands of books that are out about Kennedy. And if, sure, there's currency and commerce to be made.
But there's also a surge of resentment against all of this 50th anniversary of the assassination stuff. That's what I was reading on one website, as I told you earlier this morning. It's as if people just want to be rid of it and done with it.
Okay,
too much
but
already.
That's fine, I guess.
I don't feel that way myself. At
right,
all.
But the facts remain that the CIA, FBI really dropped the ball in 63, and they're saying, as we know, 9/11 was another one of those cases where there were clues that they could have stepped in and done something.
You know who lays out the CIA hypothesis very strongly? Only after the fact of his own failure in court in New Orleans, Jim Garrison. He did a novel, and he came on our Extension 720 to talk about it many, many years ago, obviously. But
okay, there's the president calling you. That's the bat phone.
I'm afraid it's my cell phone. Forgive me.
Well, you haven't done it in a year, so you know. You don't have to turn it off on a podcast,
right.
I guess, right?
But
you can start again.
Garrison settled finally for the CIA hypothesis. A rogue faction of the CIA killed Kennedy because he was messing up the prosecution of the Cold War, and the CIA lived on the Cold War.
And who was that mob figure you were trying to think of in Louisiana before the break? Marcello?
Marcello. Marcello is the way he pronounced it. He was the mafia boss of New Orleans, and the other guy, Trafficante, was the mafia boss of both Miami and Tampa, I believe.
All right. You want to set up this next piece of tape and then a phone call or two?
This is from a guy named McAdam. This is from a program we did 2 years ago. One of the other big questions is, if it's a conspiracy, you have to find evidence of other people doing something about trying to kill Kennedy. And the grassy knoll hypothesis, or the grassy knoll data, there were people up there. We've got photographic evidence or documentary evidence from observers that somebody was shooting from the grassy knoll, shot him from the front. So that's crucial to the conspiracy theory. And here is what the fellow that you've already heard, wrong guy. This is a guy named John McAdam, who is professor up at Marquette. 2 years ago, he appeared on the night of November 22nd with me with a new book of his about how to think about the assassination. And this is what he had to say about the grassy knoll. But it is time for us to go to the grassy knoll and to the evidence, acoustical, according to Blakey originally, when the committee was doing its final report, though he may have changed his mind since then. He's a very distinguished professor of law at Notre Dame, where he's been for some time. But also the direct sightings, according to many witnesses, of people up on the grassy knoll dashing off in one or another direction. We need to try to sort some of that out. And you need to demonstrate, as I know you can because you do it in the book, that none of that is real evidence. The quest for the truth about the Kennedy assassination. John McAdams has been sorting it all out and has written a very powerful book, I think, about this. And it's really a book about how to think about conspiracy theories when they're put before you. The title of this work is JFK Assassination Logic, How to Think About Claims of Conspiracy. Let's go to the grassy knoll. What's it like up there?
What's it like up there? Behind the stockade fence is now paved, and you can still drive down the Old Elm Extension and park right back there if you want to. Park at the place that conspiracists say there was a shooter. There are actually two places that are pointed out by conspiracists as a possible shooter locations, but that's what it's like now. And the stockade fence is still there, and there are staves missing all the time because tourists take them and they have to be replaced. Yeah. But that's what it's like.
And they can also go up to the sixth floor
museum. Yes,
of the book depository, which is now the museum.
It is now a museum. I'm going to be there next month giving a presentation.
But what about the grassy knoll portion of the conspiracy theories?
Okay. Number one, the medical evidence is quite clear that no shot hit Kennedy from the right front.
Uh-huh.
For example, a shot from the grassy knoll would hit him from the right front. But if you look at the x-rays of his skull, there are no bullet fragments to the left of center line. And indeed, there's certainly no exit on the left side of his skull, which would pretty clearly indicate that, no, he wasn't hit from the right front. Now, you could posit a grassy knoll shooter that missed, but there's no evidence of that. There are some witnesses who say they saw a grassy knoll shooter.
Exactly, yes.
But they have their problems with all of them. For example, Jean Hill, before she passed away, I think it was in 2000, 2001, was claiming that she had seen a shoot, looked up on the grassy knoll and actually seen a shooter. The problem is about 45 minutes after the assassination, she was interviewed by Jimmy Dardenne of WBAP-TV Fort Worth. The film still exists, and he asked her point blank, did you see a shooter? And she said, I didn't see a shooter. Dardenne said, you only heard? And she said, I only heard. There's a guy named Ed Hoffman who claims to have been able to see the area behind the stockade fence, who describes a man in a suit. He called him Suit Man, shooting Kennedy, walking down the fence and handing off the rifle, actually tossing it to a guy in a railroad uniform he called Railroad Man, who knelt behind the signal box and disassembled it and then walked away. Two or three problems with his testimony. First of all, that's not apparently what he was saying in an early to the FBI in 1967, I think.
All right. You got Railroad Man, Suit Man. Milt Rosenberg is here. Hang, Milt, we're going to continue on, and I know people have been on hold. We'll try to squeeze a few calls in before 6. Dr. Milt Rosenberg is at his old stomping grounds here, visiting with me for this hour, and we have phone calls. Milt, let's take Don here. Thanks for holding on, Don. What's on your mind?
Gary, I was with the 163rd Military Police Battalion in Washington, D.C., the day of the funeral. And we were stationed in Lafayette Park, right across from the entrance to the White House. We were there for about a day and a half, obviously pretty heavily armed because the fear at that time was this would not be the last assassination attempt. And I had the privilege, although naturally you can't take pictures when you're on Army duty, of seeing Jackie and de Gaulle and everyone come out of the White House down the road and get into the entourage for the going to the White House, or Capitol, excuse me. It was a highly emotionally charged scene. All of the city at the time was living in Washington was sad, regardless of your politics.
Right. I mean, it was one of those...
Something could not happen here in the United States, we felt.
Well, and it did, and that's why... And it was all in black and white on television. That made it even stranger, right, Mel?
I want to give you one more quick clip.
All right, wait, let's take Bob here.
All right.
Bob, can you say what you have to say quickly?
Yes, quickly. My reading so far of the book, Cruel and Shocking Act, is that if there was a conspiracy, the conspiracy was the U.S. government's cover-up of how inept both the CIA and the FBI were in terms of handling information they had on Oswald for months.
Yeah, that is the very point. That's the very point that Sheehan makes. He was asked by members of the staff to do the book because he had done a very good book on the 9/11 commission earlier. The guy came to him and said, "Now do one on the Warren Commission." And he did. And what he found every place he turned was that FBI and CIA were essentially covering up their own inefficiency and inadequacy. But he does not come to the conclusion that they intended to arrange for Kennedy's assassination. But they're partly complicit just by virtue of their poor performance.
And you've got another piece here.
A last clip, the Castro theory. Here's a revelation that Sheehan, in the book that we've just been talking about, makes.
I learn, again, this is really quite startling, that Fidel Castro did submit to questioning by an employee from the commission. Went down to Cuba, and they went on to, I guess, Castro's yacht, and they spoke for 3 hours or so. What came of that?
That's an amazing story, but Castro was adamant publicly after the assassination that he had nothing to do with it, that this wasn't any Cuban conspiracy. And he apparently sent word to the Warren Commission that he was willing to be questioned. And in those days, Fidel Castro was... he was the devil. The United States government and any sort of official part of the United States government could not be seen conversing with Fidel Castro. But the Warren Commission apparently decided it still wanted to question him if it had the opportunity. So a very secret mission was set up for one of the young staff lawyers, a guy by the name of William Coleman, who was actually sent out on a boat to the waters off Cuba, where he meets up with Castro, who's on his yacht, and Coleman boards the yacht, and they talk for 3 hours, and Castro again adamantly denies he had anything to do with the assassination. And it's a wonderful story, if only because Coleman knew Castro. That may be why he was chosen for the mission, because Coleman knew Castro from the jazz clubs of Harlem, where apparently Castro used to like to go when he visited New York in the 40s and 50s.
Huh. They're wonderful.
And amazing, and still, was he himself? Is Castro, 50 years later, still around?
The only one?
Yeah. All right, let me grab this phone call. Mike, you're on. Mike, go ahead.
Hi, it's a pleasure to hear Dr. Rosenberg again. I used to listen to you, like, every night for your last 3 years on the air. I mean, it was the only place you can hear people talk about Chicago politics, great authors talking about books they wrote, about great ideas, and not just to make a buck. And I think I should get some college credit for listening to you. And even Gary said he felt smarter just listening to you. I used to listen to WGN for 8 hours a night just to hear Dr. Rosenberg's show, and now I don't think I listen to it 8 hours a week.
Oh, geez.
They made a big mistake.
All right, can you carve four off for me, Mike? Come on.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I know Milt had his following, but give me a few. Dennis, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
I'd just like to thank Milt. Yeah, hello. This is Dennis calling from Alabama. Hi, Gary. I'd like to thank you, Milt, for your ever-growing body of work. I concur with the last caller, but as another aside, when my son was born in 1978, I played your show under his crib on the radio.
Oh, that's like playing Mozart, I see. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Well, not until, I'm maybe 3 years old, and then we had it in the house all the time. Well, lovely. I'm hoping some of that would have rubbed off. He is now an Air Force pilot, major, currently deployed in Afghanistan, and he's within spitting distance of his doctorate in aeronautical engineering.
Wonderful.
And
paid off.
I think your help.
Glad to have done something for you, by all means.
Put us under your crib is what the lesson is here.
Yeah, just let me say once again, Rosenberg's still on the air podcast, and we've been talking about the podcast. Once again, the location for the podcast, there are some 50 of them up right now, and they will be eternally available, I hope. And it's simply miltrosenberg.com, or if you want to see it in the context of the larger operation of which it is a part, go to ricochet.com, R-I-C-O-C-H-E-T, ricochet.com. And then you got to scroll down through the various podcasts to find the one that's called, strange way to name the thing, The Milt Rosenberg Show.
All right, Milt, a pleasure. Good to see you again.
Been a real pleasure. Thank you
WGN.
Very much for asking me.
My pleasure. Thank you.